remember that, you know, good people actually always finish on the best side because God's on that side, and when God's for us, no one can be against us and that kind of thing. And I just tried to encourage her that it is worth it, hold on. And a friend of hers derided my comment. I was the only one that said anything positive to her. Everyone else was agreeing with her. Mm-hmm. And said, and finished with LMAO at Christians. And
for those of you who don't know, LMAO means laughing my ass off.
Oh.
Very crude. Yeah.
So it was a very rude comment.
At Christians.
To
me, what they said.
Because I'm
a Christian. At Christians.
You know, she knew I was a Christian.
Very rude,
like,
very nasty.
So I was very insulted, but I thought, you know, consider the source, don't worry about it. Well, that same friend, not the friend of her that I don't know, but that friend that always posts negative things, just texted or messaged me privately on Facebook on Monday, begging me to tell her that God wouldn't punish her forever and to give her hope. So we've been having a back and forth that, you know, so my point in saying this is Facebook isn't always a bad thing.
It's
Sometimes it's just a tool. To talk.
It's just a tool. And it can be used in a good way or a bad way, just like any of the other tools that we have. But my point is, it is going to be used.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And we as Christians need to figure out how we can use it to our best advantage, how we can use it to help sow the seed. And not just rail at the wind that it exists, because that doesn't help. Doesn't do any good. So there's a lot of ways that we appear to the community. I do a lot of public speaking to people I don't know, and I'm with them an hour and a half to 6 hours. That's not an opportunity for me to spread the word, but it's an opportunity for them to know who I am and know that I'm not going to use curse words when I do it. Oh, I took a class, that's not quite true. I took 1 week of a class at the graduate level at Texas A&M Commerce, and I came home and quit because, first of all the people in that room cursed. They couldn't open their mouth without cursing. And the instructor said, well, at least I didn't drop the F-bomb on you this week.
Oh, wow.
And I'm thinking, really? I paid you money?
Don't listen to that.
So I came home and withdrew. Made me real mad. I told Roger, I said, this will not be successful. Because the first time she talks like that, I will either leave or I'll tell her about it and I'll leave. But this, it won't turn out well. So I withdrew. Because I don't intend to be deliberately insulted in that way.
Why should you pay good money to
right.
listen to that?
So I got out. I got most of my money back. I don't give it all back. I have students who, until I do all my teaching these days online, and as we were just talking about, it's easier to drop your standards when you can do it so quickly.
When you're not looking face-to-face.
When you're not looking face-to-face, and you don't have to think so hard about it. Because you can shoot off an email without thinking about it. Not something that pencil and paper. And you have to actually form the words, you know, and think about them. So I have students often who will... Now, they don't usually curse, because I am, after all, their instructor. But they'll use abbreviations like that or do something. And I, every time, write them back, even if it's just slang, we're doing professional work. I write them and I say, there are still people in the world who are insulted by that kind of language. And I'm one of them. And you won't write like that in my class. You just won't. So I think as Christians, we have to really remember that we're trying to maintain a standard. It's very hard in today's world. Now, I don't think the world's a whole lot worse than it's ever been. When people talk about the 40s and 50s in our country, if it was quite a bit different publicly, it was kind of a little bubble in history. All you have to do is go back and look at Genghis Khan. And the 20s were morally deficit in our country. So I don't think the world overall is a worse place than it ever was. It's just always been a bad place. God's always told us, this one's not your home. You do what you can here. You try to help others. But you don't really live here. Has anybody gotten the new directory yet? Mm-hmm. Have you noticed his little comments through?
No, I haven't even looked through.
But he did a wonderful job. On the Waltons, he said, J.B. has preceded his family to the next world. Okay. But he just did a wonderful job, because this isn't home. It feels like home. It feels like where we want to be. My brother one time said he was not afraid of death. He was a little afraid of dying, because we don't know what that is. We don't know what that feels like. Or he said, but I'm not afraid to be where I'm going to be. And I hope I can have that same thought. But anyway, we are always, always communicating to the community. Now, I'll tell you that I didn't look as hard as I should have. Now, she says the community and communication come from the same root word. Well, I don't like it when people throw stuff out like that and don't back it up with fact. I wasn't able to find anything that told me that. My guess is she's probably right, but before next week I will look it up in the Latin. I tried, but I couldn't find anything. So if you find it, let me know. Probably it is, but I just don't like it when people say that and leave it dangling. Let me know what you're coming from. But my guess is it's some Latin word that talks about back and forth. You to me, or us to the community. That's a guess. Maybe Amy's going to tell us here in a minute. But we do know that our every action can, if they know we're a Christian, communicate something to Christ, about Christ, to the people who need us and know us, for good or bad. I have a friend, I've told you about her before, I work with her pretty often, and she grew up sort of Methodist, sort of. Not a religious person. We've tried to have a few conversations, and they don't go anywhere. We'll keep trying. But whenever we travel on business together, I'm, of course, going to church, and she sees that as a big waste of time because we could be working. Well, you know, I found it. Good, thank you. Latin roots. But does it say it's the same as community? Yes. Communication is a word with a rich history, from the Latin communicare, meaning to impart, share, or make common, the back and forth stuff. Latin munus has to do with duties or gifts offered publicly. That's good. Including gladiatorial shows. Communicatio did not signify the general arts of human connection via symbols, nor suggest the hope for some kind of mutual recognition. Communicatio generally involves tangibles, handing something to someone. So yeah, it does come out of the same root. Yeah, it's in there. It is.
Related to such words as munificent, community.
Right. Again, sharing, back and forth. Thank you, Amy. So anyway, this friend that I was talking to, we were talking about work, and then she ended up, and then her cell phone called me back. She didn't know it. And I'm yelling her name, you know, but she can't hear me. And I hear she and her husband talking, because we're going on this trip on Saturday, and I'll, of course, go to services twice on Sunday before we meet with the people on Monday. And she gets kind of frustrated by that. And I heard her husband, I hung up pretty quickly, and I told her, I said, I hung up so I couldn't hear y'all talking about me. Sent her a text. But he said, here's what I heard before I hung up. Well, I don't get it. She's out of town. She doesn't know anybody at that church anyway. And I understand that they don't understand, because Methodism is pretty social. It's pretty much kind of a club where you go see people and do things like that. So I wasn't insulted, because I know they feel that way. But when we're on our trip, I will try yet again to explain to her that it's not about my seeing you, although I like that. It's about my worshiping God. And he wants me to do it, and I'm going to do it wherever I am. And if I know 80 people or no people, that doesn't matter.
And you might just know somebody.
Well, I do now, because I've been there before. So now I have friends there.
Well, and you don't know who you're going to find. Right. We got to a place in the Air Force, and I saw this person standing outside the church building. Never been there before. Who had known when I was
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Happens all the time. In the church, we're a small community.
You know, so. There's 3 degrees of separation.
Yeah, so. But... But that's part of me in the community with him. I mean, I don't know him all that well. But all he is right now is perplexed. Why does she want to spend that time knowing she doesn't know anybody there? So we'll talk about it again. One time, years ago, she said to me, "How'd you get mixed up with a church that doesn't let women talk?" And I said, "That's not really true." So we talked a little bit about that. So. She has some misconceptions, and try though I might, I don't make much progress. Laura?
I was going to say, sometimes too, though, I have found, like, even in my family, it perplexes them. Why is it that you're drawn so much to that? What is it that compels you to do that?
Yeah.
So they're, you know, it's like my sister, it's kind of funny. It's like, it was like a chicken running with her head cut off. She sees the piece, and I tell her how to get it, but she's like, no, it's got to be something else. It's right there in front of her, but she can't see it. Yeah. But she wants it.
At least she's thinking.
Too simple.
I'm trying to think of who is it naming, like bathing in the morning. They want something really, you know, fanciful for it, and it's not that way. But it does compel. My family sees that. They're not there yet, but they see that.
Right.
So it is it's a good example by that.
Right.
We lead our people.
Right. And that wanting the something big, like Naaman, that's arrogance on our part. Mm-hmm. You know, Naaman kind of admitted it, you know. I'm important. He didn't even come out to meet me. He just sent somebody and told me to go to that dirty river. We got better rivers at home. So, well, in that first little section too, she says, how about the quiet little woman who wants to just keep to herself and mind her own business? Is this isolation justified? Can we do that? Can we really pull ourselves out of the community and say, well, I just won't bother them and they won't bother me?
It's kind of like, in some ways, like the Amish community. You know, I respect in some ways that they're trying to get to that, but you have to communicate with the... You can't preach it if you're not
right.
talking to anybody.
Right. You can't sow the seed if you're not talking to anybody. So, and it's a fine balance. I mean, because we also have a lot of scriptures about minding our business, not other people's business, and working at our home and keeping things and not spending time idly going from house to house. But if you're teaching, it's not idly going from house to house. It's with a purpose.
And I tell my kids, because they try to use the verse, you know, the fact that Jesus was, you know, dealing with sinners all the time as their excuse why they want to associate with worldly people. And I always come back with verses like this.
Mm-hmm.
It depends upon the activity you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I tell the kids. If you're going to use Jesus as your example, you have to be doing what he was doing,
right.
which was actively teaching them,
right.
going to their house for the purpose of teaching. Going to a movie theater with your worldly friend, I'm sorry, that accomplishes nothing for their soul. That's strictly a pleasure activity, so don't throw scripture at me as your
right.
reason why you're going to go. It's not going to hold water. But if you want to have them over our house, you know, so that you can visit with them and talk to them and get to
right.
know them so that you know how to speak to them, that's a totally different activity. That one makes sense.
We have to distinguish between being in the world and being off the world.
Right. Absolutely. I have some dandy cough syrup that I could have taken, but it has hydrocodone in it, so I wouldn't be standing up here. No, thank you. No, I'm good. Nothing really makes it go away. It's just right here. So you're right. Why we're associating with people who are sinners is the whole issue.
Mm-hmm.
Are we there to help them, to try to teach them? If we're just there because we want to be engaged in their activities, that's not what Christ did. That's not what Paul did. That's not what any of them did. Put it under a bushel. No. It might help if we look again at some of the verses concerning our influence. These may enable us to see more clearly the relationship God wants his people to have with the world. Amy, would you read that one, that Philippians, please?
Sure. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom we shine as lights in the world. Philippians 2, 4, and 15.
If we're hiding, we're not shining. And the little kid's song, you know, that she's talking about, teaches us that. As well as the verse that says don't do that. But I think we want to hide. a lot of times. It's easier. It's not nearly as stressful. You don't have to worry about somebody rejecting you if you hide. But it doesn't do what God wants us to do. In Romans 14:7, none of us lives unto himself, and no man dieth to himself. We're not alone in this world. Everything we do impacts someone. In my field of study, it's called family systems theory. And I'm thinking, okay, good for you, or Uri Bronfenbrenner, who came up with it. But here we have it right here in Romans. The Lord already told us that. But in family systems theory, it says, if a child does this, it impacts the parents over here, no matter what it is. In fact, there's this great little video, a three-minute non-speaking video. It's a platform just in space, just floating. And it's got all these little stick people on it. And if one of them runs to the edge over here, it kind of tilts, and these people have to back up over here, and they're just moving. It's a very interesting way to show this verse that we don't live to ourselves. Everything we do impacts someone. Someone. Mostly our family, but certainly it can impact people out in the world. Mother, would you read that one, the Matthew 5? There on the bottom of the page.
Yes. You're the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven.
So, you know, just saying the same thing over and over. We can't hide and pretend that it doesn't matter. It's just me. I'm just a woman by myself. What I do doesn't matter. Nobody cares. You know, it's not true. We're a light. We're all individually, each one of us, young or old, we're a light. And we're supposed to shine that light. So on the next page, she says, come out of your cocoon. And we've been talking about this. You know, that the first place Paul went when he entered a new city was?
Where?
Synagogue. Why?
Yeah. I always wonder why they didn't throw him out.
Me too.
Well, I think they did a time or two.
Why didn't they every time?
So we've talked about that we have to spend some time associating with people who are not Christians, or we're not spreading the word. We're saying, okay, I've got it, too bad about you. You know, I know I'm going to get eternal life, but you don't get it because I'm afraid to talk to you. And I would like to say I've never felt that way. But the afraid to talk to you, that's hard. It's hard to walk up to somebody and talk to them, even if you're friends with them, even if you have a relationship like this friend that I'll be traveling with next week. We'll talk some, but she will absolutely shut it down. That won't keep me from trying again. But when you already know what the reaction will be, it's difficult to. But I have an opening. I can tell her that I heard them talking about me.
Sometimes the thing that we forget is, and I'm speaking to myself too, people are in different places at different points in their lives. So just because she rejected you last time,
that's right,
doesn't mean that there haven't been events in her life this year that have caused her to recall things you've said in the past that may make her more open to what you have to say today. And sometimes we look at that past rejection as the final end-all for their soul, and we hurt them by doing that. And if we have to understand that it's not our job to provide the increase.
Right.
We're not responsible for the results. We're responsible to try.
Right.
And so every time you have opportunity, you try, hoping that maybe you're catching them at that new point in their life where they're ready to hear this.
If we plant the seed, it will not return unto him void.
That's right. You know?
So, and you may have to plant over and over because the frost might kill it when it comes up the first
time. At the very least, on Judgment Day, God will say to her, I sent you Jean.
Yeah.
You know, she talked to you. You didn't listen.
Yeah.
But if Jean didn't talk,
yeah,
then
that's me.
Jean's in trouble.
That's right.
You know.
So,
and I'm using her name, but my name.
No, because mine's coming up next week when I'm yes. spending time with her. 55 miles per hour or bus. When we talk to our children about obeying the law, do we always obey the law? The law is the law. Just a speed limit's a law, just like anything else. Roger's the most sort of, he does that better than anybody I've ever known. Yeah. He got a speeding ticket the other day, and I don't know that he's ever had a speeding ticket, and it just undid him. And what happened was he was in a school zone, and you can see the 30 mile per hour up here, and he got there too fast, and the cop was waiting right there, and it just crushed him. He said, "I don't speed," and he doesn't ever. I couldn't believe he got a speeding ticket. So cruise control is my best friend.
We do need to remember, though, the lessons of Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego and Paul, Peter and James and Paul, and all of them who disobeyed the law when it directly contradicted what God told
them. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And if we have to choose between the two,
yeah,
absolutely we choose God's law. But as long as it is not in conflict with God's law, just because we don't like it doesn't give us the power to not do it. I don't like paying property taxes and they're due the end of the month. I don't like it a bit. But I will. I'll pay it. And I won't pay it because I'm afraid they'll come put me in jail. I'll pay it because God said, you obey the laws of the land. Mother and I were watching Andy Griffith yesterday. And I thought I had seen every Mayberry episode ever done, but I had not seen this one. And we came into it in the middle, and Opie is saying to his dad, so kids have to tell the truth, but adults don't. And apparently they were going to sell their house, and Andy just wasn't going to talk about the crack in the ceiling that he had kind of plastered over, but not really fixed, not fixed the root cause of it. But Opie was going to sell his bike or something, and his dad said, well, you have to tell him that that tire goes flat all the time. He said, well, you didn't tell him about the crack in the roof. And he said, well, a bike's a bike and a house is a house. Opie's looking at it. Well, in a little bit, because Opie told the people coming in, he said, yeah, there's a big old crack up there. And they came back to look at the house again. Barney was the real estate agent, so you can imagine how that was. But he said, Barney said, well, you know how kids are, they just talk. And he was trying to get past it, and he said, they exaggerate. And Opie's looking at his dad. And finally, Andy, of course, does the right thing. And he said, there is a crack in the roof, and the furnace doesn't work so well. Whatever, he named two or three things. He said, it's a 35-year-old house, and there are some things that aren't perfect about it. And, of course, Barney flew into a fit. But he saw his kid looking at him, and he knew he had a cutting-edge moment that you've got to teach, or you've got to let your kid think you're a liar and a hypocrite. And I just couldn't imagine that Andy would let that happen. So,
and Mayberry is not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
Mayberry.
Yep. Anyway, the kids are watching. They do know, and they are very literally minded. So when those things appear to them, they don't see shades of gray. You didn't tell the truth. Period. Now, it can't happen quite as much in this world as it used to in our world when we were growing up. But if you're standing behind the driver, you could see what the speedometer said. And little kids pay attention to that kind of stuff. Kids around 7 or 8 start getting into rules. Rules become very important to them. That's when they start playing competitive games on their own where their parents aren't pushing them into something that you can play around. But they like rules, and so they start watching you. Are you following the rules? Are you following the recipe? You told me to set the table this way last time. We, you know, anything that has an order and rules, they know about, and they catch on to what's going on in the grocery store. If you're sitting there eating 15 grapes and you're not paying for them, they know that. I got Cole some milk one time in the store because it was way past lunchtime and he was really hungry. He said, I mean, we have to pay for this. I said, we will pay for this. It's okay for you to drink it because I can still show them, yeah, you know, and we'll pay for it. But he knew, you know, that you're not supposed to do that right then. So I had to make sure he understood that we were actually going to pay for that. So they're watching, and people in the world are watching. Have you ever, I'm sure you have, you've gotten some extra change and you gave it back. You know, he said, you gave me too much money. And they're astonished. They're astonished. And one girl gave me like a 20, thought she was giving me a 5, and I said, no, that's too much, I gave it back. She said, is so nice of you. And I said, no, it's right, and God's watching, so, you know, whether you knew or not doesn't change. But, again, a little teachable moment. And I try. I don't always remember to do it. But any time I'm in a situation like that, I try to say, God's watching. God knows. Because I want to know it's not me just being a great person. I might have liked that $20.
And they need to say to you, like was said to us, but I'm glad it was y'all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because people will lie, cheat, and steal.
I've had people get angry with me for coming back and pointing out their mistake. One time I didn't get charged for yarn at Walmart, and I went back in and told her, and she was mad. And I thought, well, you know.
Well, she had to void tickets and stuff. It made work for her.
Oh, she was embarrassed and insulted that I pointed out her mistake.
And probably in trouble.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah. Still have to do
what you and I didn't mean it to point out the mistake. No, I was trying to be honest. Right. You know, just.
But that's one of those in the world, not of the world. We just have to do those things that are right. Swords into plowshares. Now, I'm not sure why she chose that name particularly, because I'm not sure that it really. That example really fits here so much. But what she is talking about, you know, the Roman practice of here, carry my stuff for a mile, and the Lord said, if someone compels you to go a mile, go yet another mile. And he said, there's no bond or free. However, following the laws of land, what did he tell Onesimus?
Go back.
Now, you talk about a hard saying. On the other hand, he said, to Philemon, thank you. Treat him as a brother. He's coming back to you, and the law says he has to do that. But you have an obligation to treat him as a brother. So, even though the law compels, let's see, what's a good example? If you're a Christian and the law says you can, let's say, not to a brother but to somebody outside, charge a certain amount of interest for money that they borrowed or something, are you free to not do that?
Yeah.
Because you're not disobeying any law if you just choose not to do that. So we have freedom even within laws on some cases to say, I don't have to take that money and I won't take it. So, the upper hand, the more important piece, always following the law as we're supposed to, but if we have freedom, then our more compelling argument is, how would we react as Christians? How would a Christian handle this situation? And what should we be doing that might act as light of the world?
We don't use our liberty as a cloak for vice. The law says I can do that, but.
Yeah. But I don't have to.
It's not right for me to do.
Yeah. Hey, you just look like you want to say something.
No, I promise. I'm thinking you, sir.
He goes on to talk about the worthy woman who stretched out her hand to the poor. And we've talked about this before, about helping people who are in need, who we think might be in need, who we don't know if they're really in need. But their circumstance, for me, their circumstance, what they do with what I've given them, is not my responsibility. My responsibility is to remember that Christ said, if you've given someone a drink of water, if you've done any of this to any of these, you've done it to me. Well, that's my goal. Handed a guy a dollar bill the other day. He was on the side of the street, and I was at a stoplight, and I says, not much. And he said, it's all not much to put it together where I can live. Did he mean it? Did he need it? He didn't look drunk at the time. You know, I don't know. I don't know what he was going to do with that money, but it's a dollar. We got lots of them. Even those among us who struggle, we still have lots more than so many people.
Sometimes, though, the drink of water is more important than the dollar.
Absolutely. I always like it better when I can give something tangible.
Yeah, me too.
I often have bottles of water in the car, and that's what I usually hand people. But she did these good deeds so much so that her husband wasn't known in the gates because he had time to be there because he wasn't trying to keep everything juggled at home because she was taking care of things. Dorcas was mourned because of the many good works that she did. So going back to that woman that says, why can't I just sit in my house and not bother anybody? We're not told to be uninvolved in the world. Like Glenda said, we're told to be not of the world, but we're told that we need to be involved, we need to be sharing. For such a time as this, on page 75, sometimes our duty to our community is simply to speak out for right. There's no more stirring story in the Bible than that of the righteous prophet Elijah, who single-handedly confronted 450 of the evil prophets of Baal, challenged them to a duel between the true God and their idol. To sit back and let evil take over just because good was never heard is burying our talent. And I do think her next paragraph is too, we're prone to underrate ourselves and think, what good can I do? I'm just one person. I'm just one woman who's going to listen to me. And maybe nobody. You know, that's the fact of it. Maybe nobody. But probably somebody. Laura?
I was going to say, you know, I did this thing with the kids. We had a lesson a while ago, but it was talking about being grumpy or being happy. Nobody wants to be around a grumpy person. So I said, okay, I'm going to do this experiment. I said, everybody look at me. And I smiled as big as I could. And I said, okay. And I just kept smiling. And all of a sudden, all of them smiled. And then I said, well, what happened when I did that? You know, but it's contagious. If you do a good thing, a lot of time that causes other things.
It encourages people to do good things. Talks about Esther. What if she hadn't had the courage to speak up? One woman, and she was in a pretty difficult situation. I don't think in our world right now it takes very much courage to be a Christian. It's a little social anxiety, or maybe somebody's going to hurt our feelings, but nobody's going to come drag us out of the house and kill us. And I think we far, far, far underestimate how blessed we are in that circumstance. When I read those passages that say, be faithful even unto death,
I wonder how I would measure up.
Me too.
I wonder how I would do it in Iran, Iraq, Pakistan.
Yeah.
I wonder how I would do it.
Would I be courageous enough, strong enough, faithful enough? I hope so. I like to think so. But I'm a coward in a lot of ways. It's quite frightening. Quite frightening.
But they have this one man in prison right now in one of the countries. He's a Christian. Muslim country. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard that he's been relieved.
Laura? I was going to say, a few years ago, Jim was contracting for Lockheed, and he had to go to Saudi, and they, when he went over there for 6 weeks, and he had a list of what he had to bring, and one of the things that they said, definitely do not bring is your Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And he packed it, and it was a horrible feeling, because it was a mixed thing. We both knew he needed it, but it was a terrible thing to know if he got caught with that.
They'd kill him.
What they would do, yes. And it was just a, it was kind of, it was a test for us as Christians.
Yeah.
But it was scary when he was over there and stuff. I was glad when he came home, but yes, it was a challenge for us.
And in South Africa, our preacher, we were listening to a man who preaches in South Africa, who the congregation in Louisville supports. He got across a particular border at a particular time where the dictator of that country said, you will pay homage to me during this time and no other. Well, he was over there preaching and they detained him, and his little wife was sitting at home wondering where he was because he was not allowed to communicate with anybody. And they finally figured out that he was essentially harmless and sent him home. But
it's, we live in a very blessed time and place.
Yes.
I really can't allow myself to think about my grandchildren and what might happen in their time. Because I just can't go there. It's too frightening for me. Because I see so many of our religious liberties being chopped. It's frightening. Let's see, down at the bottom of the page, recently, remember she wrote this in 75 or so, a large university crowd gathered to hear a speaker whose talk turned out to be scornful denunciation of Christianity. Suddenly, a young girl near the back of the audience stood up and a quavery voice began to sing, "Stand up, stand up for Jesus." For a moment, she sang along and the room began to resound with song as she was joined by hundreds of others who only needed her example. Now, once again, great little story. I don't like it when people don't reference, you know, tell me when this happened so I can go read about it. Because otherwise, and that's just the academia in me, because otherwise she could have just made that up. I like references.
I can't give you any of the reference material, but Dad used this once in a Wednesday night invitation years ago. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe that lends a little more credence.
So you found it somewhere too.
Yeah, he knew the speaker's name.
Okay, see, that makes it better for me. I like referencing.
One time, this is a personal example, I was out with a group of non-Christians. I had been involved in a play, and after we took down the set, we all went out to dinner, and everybody there decided to have a drink. And I, of course, ordered the soda. Well, the girl beside me always felt compelled to drink whenever she went out with this group because she didn't like being the only one who didn't drink, but she didn't like to drink. So it took my strength to not order something alcoholic to keep her from doing it. And that's the thing I always tell my kids is you don't always know.
That's right.
Just because it seems like everybody else is doing it, there may be other people there that don't want to sin, mm-hmm. but they get caught up in what the crowd is doing. So by being strong enough to say no yourself, you buffet them and give them the strength to say
right.
no.
Yeah, that's a really easy thing for me because it's expensive and it tastes nasty. I don't know why anybody would want to drink.
But you're right. That to
anything that you're doing, if you're strong enough to stand, it may help somebody else stand. And I think kids, more than anything, need that. As we grow, we are less worried about what somebody else thinks about us. But when you're young and you want to fit in, that's a very difficult time to say, I don't do that. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, always told our children to use us as a crutch when they needed to. But as they got older, I didn't want them to do that. I didn't want them to say, I can't do that because my mother said I can. I wanted them to say, I don't do that. And so we had to talk about that shift of accepting responsibility of your own to God. Mm-hmm. But I never minded them saying, my mother will kill me, I'm not going to do it. That was okay. I think she is right here when she said, if Madeline Marie O'Hare, one person could make that much commotion in this country, why can't we? Why shouldn't we?
I like that reference to 2 Kings. Mm-hmm.
Too much, too late. We're almost out of time. A word spoken in due season, how good it is. Often our words are spoken, but not in due season. Rather, our speaking is in criticism sometimes, after it's too late. Or talking to someone else about it, rather than the person that could be helped, or the person we're trying to show an example to, or the person we're trying to refute. If someone has said something wrong, and I go home and tell mother about it, but I haven't talked to that person, what good's that done? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. The person who said what they said that shouldn't have been said isn't thinking about it, changing it. I've become a gossip. I haven't done my duty. There's nothing right about that. But again, it takes a little bit of courage to say to somebody, you know, that's just not right. It's just not right. Galatians 6 and 10, we're further encouraged to do good to all men, especially those of the household of faith. And this makes it clear that although we should particularly help our brothers and sisters in Christ, our good deeds aren't to be limited to those in the church. As Christians, we can be involved in any good work which doesn't cause us to violate the laws of God. And I think the story of the Good Samaritan illustrates that quite well. It's not just your family. It's not just your congregation. It's not even just Christians. It's helping people who are in need, spiritually, physically, whatever. And we are at our time, so why don't we start at will the meeting please come to order for next week. And like I said, I'll be gone. He needs a new beach next week, so if you're willing, come talk to me.